Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
The John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour has ended, and Pro Farmer is betting on a pretty good-sized U.S. corn crop. We'll talk about those numbers and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. During this half hour, we'll take up the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and the numbers, along with Chip Flory. He's the editor at Pro Farmer. Our panelists today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Well, let's open the discussion with this question, and then we'll bring Chip Flory into the conversation very early today. But first off, what was the most important event of the week, the crop tour, the new highs in wheat, or something else? And we'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think the crop tour is definitely interesting because it gives us a little bit different perspective, a little later than the USDA. It's been a couple, 3 weeks since that information's come out, so I kind of like looking at that. I was interested in seeing the high in the wheat market yesterday, definitely, and I was very impressed with the way that it held in there whenever we broke back under, you know, the 750 area. And then today, you know, the wheat market stayed in there pretty strong. But to me personally, I think the most interesting thing was the Pro Farmer Tour.
And Clayton Pope?
Yeah, I'd have to say that was the most interesting. Like Matt said, it's a little bit later on the timeline here, and an awful lot's happened weather-wise, so, you know, to get their reading on it as of this later date is important. And I think also that the stabilization a lot of the outside markets after the meltdown we had last week, and the stock market had a real significant rebound. Metals did, crude oil did, and obviously the grains were pulled up as well too for you know, a lot of reasons, of course. But I think that whole bounce back really across the board in just about every market was impressive.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Well, there's not much to add there. Sort of stole the thunder, but no, it's amazing. You know, wheat at historic highs. Once again, whoever thought we would go this high this fast this soon? And, of course, though, Chip and his crew, we would look forward every year for this annual tour to get an observation that's taking place here across the Midwest on what type of conditions we're looking at.
Chip shaking the mud from his boots yet on a Friday afternoon, I think. Hi, Chip.
Thanks. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very good. I'll tell you what, why don't you take us through the numbers, and then we'll start a conversation, please.
You bet. Okay, when we went through Iowa for the corn yields, we saw a 5.7% decline from a year ago, crop tour to crop tour. USDA on August 1 was down 10%. So yes, we saw a smaller crop than what we saw a year ago. But at the same time, a 6% decline from the crop tour and a 10% decline from USDA on August 1, that suggests to me that maybe USDA went a little bit too far to the downside in Ohio. In Indiana, we looked at exactly the same crop. We were up 0.7% on corn yields. USDA was steady. Illinois, the crop tour was up 7.4% from a year ago. Illinois was up 9.2%, according to USDA on August 1. South Dakota, here's kind of a rub that we've got with USDA's numbers. The crop tour found a 6% increase. USDA on August 1 put the crop up 21% on corn yields. So that tells me right there, when you get a spread that's that wide, USDA is not right. The crop tour isn't right. It's going to meet somewhere in the middle on a spread like that. Nebraska, we were up 8.5%. USDA on August 1, up 10.5%. Again, we both saw a better crop. I think it's a really, really good crop that we saw out there. Maybe the best ever crop that we saw out there. Iowa, we were up 4.2%. USDA on August 1 up 8.4%. So with some of the stock standing problems and some of the other issues in that corn crop over there, I don't think we're going to do 180 bushel. You know, the record yield in Iowa is 181. That was in 2004 with a lot less acres in Iowa. We've added some pretty marginal ground, the corn on corn ground, and to push right up to within a bushel of the record yield in Iowa seems like a bit of a stretch to us this year. Minnesota, here's another rub that we've got with USDA. USDA on August 1 put the crop down 3%. We came in up 3%. But the reason for that, and the comment was made, that a lot has happened weather-wise since USDA did their survey work, and most of that, I think, has happened in Minnesota and northwest Iowa. You know, those rains came in on August 3rd, and they were literally crop-saving rains. That crop just was hanging on and hanging on to its yield potential, and when those rains came on August 3rd, that's the thing that triggered it, and it held on to it. But I tell you what, Minnesota, while I was impressed with it, and I think it could still yield what it did a year ago at 161 bushels per acre for a statewide average. But we really measured potential in Minnesota this year, guys. The crop is mature enough, but the stock quality is terrible. We saw anthracnose across that state, and when you throw the water on top of it that they've had now, you got to believe that the stalk rot issues are coming in there, and if they keep that crop standing before the combines roll, I will really be surprised.
Well, Chip, let me ask you a quick question right here in Minnesota. When you look at the crop conditions report, the weekly one, for the last few weeks, only 33% of the corn crop's good to excellent.
Right.
That's the third worst ratings over 20 years.
Yep.
Then how can you come in and raise yield from a year ago?
Exactly, and it's the visual that you get from that crop as you're driving down the road. It looks terrible. I mean, you've got firing on the bottom of the plant, and then you've got 3, 4, maybe 5 green leaves, and then at the top you've got the firing at the top of the plant. So as you're driving by these fields from stop to stop, you get this green stripe running down the middle of the cornfield as you're going from stop to stop. But the crop had great yield potential. In July, it held on to it through the dry and through the heat, and when the rains came in early August, it started to fill those ears, and it really did a nice job. Now, it might measure a little light as far as test weights go in the state, because when it's this wet in Minnesota and you slow the crop, the moisture will slow down the maturity of the crop from this point forward. Normally, that's a good thing to happen, but when you get this much water on it, good grief, buy propane futures for Minnesota, because if they're going to get it before it falls down, they're going to have to get it when it's still pretty wet and get pretty aggressive on putting the heat on it.
Isn't that crop fairly ahead of schedule, though, still?
It is. It is ahead of schedule, but like I say, the amount of water that they've got is going to slow down the maturity process from this point forward. It is not as far advanced as it was a year ago at this time. A year ago, everything was in dent. Milk line was moving down. It was halfway down the kernel in most fields that we stopped in last year. And this year, we're not quite to that point. It's late dough, early dent.
What would you say if you had to sum up the eastern leg and then sum up the western leg separately? Are there two different versions of what the tour saw?
Oh, yeah, there's two different versions between the eastern and the western, and then within the eastern there's two different versions of that crop, and out west there's like three different versions of that. The reason being the planting dates. Western Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, they got some corn in very early in the season, the last part of April, and then they got knocked out of the field by around May 1. They didn't get back into the field plant corn until May 20th. And because of that, you see some of that variability in the maturity of it, and you don't get the consistency in the yields that you would like to see to really make a big yield. 2004, it seemed like every yield sample was the same in 2004. But it's good enough. It's good enough to match year ago in Minnesota as of right now. But remember, I said we're measuring a lot of potential. The crop's got to stand. In South Dakota, it is better than year ago. Nebraska, you know, you can count on the irrigated yields in Nebraska almost year to year. You can run into some different problems, you know, rust diseases and so on in those irrigated fields. But typically, you can count on a good yield. But so in Nebraska, the number that moves the needle on the yield is the dryland corn, and the dryland corn is phenomenal this year. It's not unusual to see 90 bushel statewide dryland yields out there. This year, you're probably looking at 135, 140 bushel on the dryland corn. So it's really good, really good. Western Iowa, the big difference between this year and last year is the West Central District. Last year it was burned up and fried. This year it's in pretty good shape and it's going to make real good crop. Now, the consistency in yield shows up in your state, shows up in Illinois. We saw fairly consistent yields as you move both east to west and north to south. That's what can get you a big yield, like 178 bushels per acre. But at the same time, we didn't have a lot of yields that busted out the top end of the yield range, but we sure didn't see the yields bust out the bottom end. That was the key thing this year. Seems like normally you've got more than a handful of samples that will fall 25, 30 bushels below what's going to be the median number for the state this year. There's a handful that fell 10 to 15 below the median. So it's the low end that's pulling up Illinois as much as the top end going up.
Chip, whenever you talk about Minnesota, I know we've talked on the show whenever I've been on here about the large volume of genetically modified triple stack corn.
Yep.
Do you think, in your opinion, I guess conventional wisdom would tell me it's a big reason why the corn crop was able to hold on? And how much of a difference did you see through the Midwest that you would attribute to the new genetics?
Oh, that's an issue that is playing such a huge role in just maintaining plant health through the end of the season. Yeah, go back 6-7 years ago, before, well, I can't, maybe I'm dating myself when I say that, but you go back to before BT corn, when you had border damage in almost every field. And the critical thing at that point, and I think we're just really figuring it out now, is that we were opening up that plant to different diseases to move in and making it vulnerable to the diseases that can knock it down. We're not doing that anymore. The plant is solid. It stays healthy deeper into the year. And as long as the plant is green and it's got some water, it'll continue sending weight to that ear deep into the season. And I think that's a big reason for the crop holding on to its yield potential. Now, up in Minnesota, talking about the triple stacks, there is no doubt that without rootworm protection up there in Minnesota, we would have been looking at a disaster, because every stop we made in Minnesota, you know, we drive down the road, we pull into a laneway into a field, and of course there's some weeds up around there that are in the way when you get in. You open up the door, and the first thing that happens is the rootworm beetles just explode out of the weeds. It's got to be the highest rootworm beetle count, and these are the northerns, that they've ever had up there in Minnesota. They are everywhere, and they're thick.
But they're not having an impact on the corn?
They're having limited impact on the corn, limited.
Well, that doesn't seem like it makes very much sense to me, that they should have been cutting the silks, or either that or they just came out so late that it didn't matter.
They came so late that it didn't matter. And plus, you know, these are a two-year issue.
The extended diapause.
Yeah, the extended diapause. We did see some of these the rootworm beetles going in the bean fields as well. So they're learning the tricks that they learned out of central Illinois, and learning to anticipate that corn crop coming And so they're in the beans working as well.
Well, that'll be an ugly thing, an extended diapause and laying its leg eggs.
Exactly.
I haven't seen that anywhere, so we'll have to follow that up. Hey, yep. I want to go through some more numbers very quickly as we head into about the halfway point. We better talk about some of the numbers that came in from the Chicago Board of Trade this week. And, Chip, I want you to chime in along the way on this one, too.
You bet.
September wheat, a high of 741 this week, a low at 663 and a half. It's settled at 725 and three quarters. It's settled, by the way, at a new all-time highs, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way, because I think the old high was for lead option wheat was 718 or somewhere thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So it settled above the all-time highs in the lead option wheat. 725 and three quarters, up 53 and three quarters from last week. December wheat at 742. It was up 53 and a half. Let's stay with the grains. 247 was settlement price for the oats, a penny and a half higher. Corn, 354 and a half on the high. In the nearby September, the low at 324 and a half. Their settlement price, 13 cents higher at 341 and a half. December futures at 358 and three quarters. They were up 13 for the week. The wheat market coming out of the chute, really leading things. There are all kinds of things happening in that marketplace. Can you want to sum some of it up for me really quickly, Kurt, what was happening in the wheat market for the week?
Well, the main thing continues to be the tight global supplies, and all of a sudden you've got some export business coming our way. You know, you saw Cuba come out and buy 100,000 tons there Thursday going into Friday, and definitely the demand continues to be rolling here. In fact, it's getting to a point now where we're starting to see, at least on the feed side, moving back to maybe purchase some corn instead of chasing the wheat market higher. The key is whether or not we keep push this diesel above the 750 level or not. That was sort of the benchmark to look for here over the near term.
And just as a reminder, the December ended at 742, and it was up 53.5 cents from last week. Can the wheat just drag the corn along higher, or is there enough fundamental need or demand for the corn market to continue to bring it up too?
Yeah, I think that corn coming up will be a function of many things, obviously. I think that with wheat being so high, we talked about this a little before the show, it lends credence to the fact we're going to have more wheat acres this fall. I don't think there's any doubt about it. So I think that when it comes right down to it, if there's less available acres, than what we were thinking previously, if we thought wheat acres might be steady, then that would tell me that corn's going to have to rally even more, especially given input prices. The input prices on the corn have skyrocketed again. I mean, it's going to take $300 an acre or more to put out an acre of corn next year. So whenever you look at the input prices for corn or for beans or for wheat, they're so much lower that whenever they get to these levels, you know, $6, $7 people see on the board. I know with wheat basis is a concern, but and then you look at $7, $8 beans, I think that it definitely changes people's thinking a little bit. So I think that corn's going to have to definitely bid for acres at some point.
Chip, you were meeting with farmers on your leg, and I assume you heard about the eastern leg as well. Mm-hmm. What they tell you about the ground war and what they might do about wheat and the cost of putting an acre of corn in?
Hey, these input costs that you're talking about, that is the thing that I think's got most guys scared to death when we start looking at the 2008 year. That's the reason that almost everywhere you go, when you start talking about 2008 acres, guys tell you flat out, I'm going to work more beans back into the mix for next year. So beans have to work because we can't repeat what we did in 2007. We cannot just plant 64 million acres. We've got to plant, you know, 4, 5, or 6, probably 5 million acres more than what we did this year, just to get back to a comfort level going into the 2008-09 marketing year. But corn, at the same time, has to hold on to 93 million. You know, we're looking at an ethanol usage in 08-09 of about 4.5 billion bushels. That's up another 1.1 billion. So we have to have this 93 million. 94 would make it even better to make sure that we put a little cushion in there for some yield variance. So I'd like to see a 94 million planted for 08. And then wheat's already out of the gate and playing. And by the way, I appreciate all the nice words that you said about the crop tour being the most interesting thing all week, but the most interesting thing for me was every time we were getting a market update, I wanted to know what wheat was doing, period, and end of story. That to me, that was the most important thing happening out there this week. And then back to the acreage, the cotton thing, it's perked up a little bit. It's acting like it wants to to get some acres back, and plus some of the cotton guys down there who think they can grow anything found out that it's a little harder to grow corn than what they thought it was. So cotton's going to get some acres back down there. So when you get right down to it, it's a four-way battle going into 2008. Wheat's already out of the gate and getting those acres, which should bring some more bean acres as we double crop. But nonetheless, we need to see 5 million more soybean acres next year. We got to hold this wheat hold the corn acres at least steady, and wheat's already doing the job to get some more acres for next year. So, I honestly don't know how it's all going to shake out. It's just something that we're going to have to sit back and let the market sort it out between now and decision time.
All right. Clayton Pope, I'm going to let you think about this one just for a second as I give the soybean numbers here. Our bottom's in for the marketplace, and tell me which ones are in, if that's the case, as we go into the harvest season. Soybeans, September, a high of 852, a low at $8.04. Their settlement price at 849. They're all laughing because you're laughing because you don't think you have to answer that question, don't you? Well, congratulations. You all get to answer it. 849 was the settlement price for the September. They were up 37.5 cents. November beans, it's 865. We're up 37.25. Clayton, take your stab first, and then we'll go around the horn
okay.
And see who else.
I'll probably be the contrarian here, but it's a risk I take going first, I guess. But my guess as of this point in time is that we will go down and retest those lows. And I say that partly as a result of the pro farmer numbers, although you can't put too much reliance on one test out there. But I think they were very important numbers, and if USDA comes in anywhere near there in the September report, it's confirming that we do have an adequate carryover, given the demand projections we're looking at right now. And we're going to be pushing 1.5 to 1.7 billion in corn. And the beans, if those yields are close to being correct, we're going to be 220 to 240, something like that, in the carryover probably. That being the case, we've got a wall of supplies about to hit this market in not too distant future. And we've got an awful lot of fund liquidation that's going to come at some time. So, obviously it always comes down to yield, I guess, and we got a real big clue today, I think. And if those are half right, then I would guess we've got some pressure coming.
Kirk Kimmel?
Well, we're a little bit more optimistic. We feel that you look at the corn chart, technically we've got a double bottom in place. We've broken some short-term downtrend lines, and so we've worked our way higher. I don't think we're going to $4 right away, but we feel we've got some lows in place. Same thing with the beans. We went down to $8, rallied up there. You got a little V-bottom taking place. We sort of avoid the head and shoulders top. Also, technically, seasonally, we've been putting the lows in here in the last 5 years during the month of August. The longer terms aren't due until maybe October, but short term we feel there's some lows. But the main theme is, if you're a buyer, when do you buy? When's the lows typically take place? And we feel, yes, we've got a decent crop, but we've got some big demand coming at us, and they're going to be willing buyers from now till year end.
Wasn't that double bottom you just mentioned a head and shoulders top last week? Isn't that right? I think it was.
Well, it depends if you got the chart upside down or straight up or sideways.
Okay, and I'd like numbers from you, too, but I also want you to take up cash basis for me just a bit since you operate
a
grain elevator.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and pretty much agree with Kurt. I feel pretty strongly. I think it's tough to argue that you won't have some weakness during the harvest, but that leads into the next question. I think the lows are in place probably, in my opinion, on the board. I think that basis levels, though, are bound to be pretty darn wide. Right now, we're still looking at a much wider basis than most guys think. I've talked to some farmers and say, it's not going to be anything for us to have a 70-80 cent basis potentially during the thick of harvest. And at one point I had a guy say, well, I can't believe that. And at that time we were at a 55 cent basis. I said, that's only 15 cents away.
He's just looking at a bigger number for your cash
right.
bed.
Looking right now, we're 50 cents between the dece and the fall bed locally. And that's a fairly wide basis, but I don't think it's going to get any better.
And Chip, that sounds like a basis we get out on Iowa, not here in Illinois, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And our basis has situation has changed a lot because of all the ethanol production but one of the things we noticed out on the crop tour this week, more shiny new steel than we've ever seen before. small elevators. Small elevators throwing up 500,000, 750,000 bushel of storage capacity. That was throughout South Dakota, Nebraska, Western Iowa, Minnesota. Roger over on the Eastern Leg of the tour saw some shiny steel this last week too. So there's lots of new storage capacity out there, but I don't think there's enough to handle the corn off 93 million planted acres. So we're going to have plenty of piles out there, especially in Iowa, I believe, and we're going to be pretty dependent on those ethanol facilities for the short term to clean those piles up as fast as they can, like they did last year, and start to firm that basis up after the first of the year. But to me, it's an acreage battle situation going into the harvest season, and we may forget about yields really quickly when they realize that beans have to get these acres bought.
You forgot to answer the question whether harvest lows are in or not.
You know, we may retest the lows one more time, but no, you know what? I don't think we will. I'm looking at the charts for the first time this week because I've been on the road looking at them right now, and it does look pretty strong in here, and I'd say that we have put the lows in, and that it's time to get this acreage battle started.
Okay, one quick couple of questions and some numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, and we'll wrap this show up. August live cattle this week, 94.55 on their high. Their low at 91.60. August settled at 94.37.5. They were up 242.5. August feeder cattle at 117.57.5 were up $1.15. October lean hogs at 71.42.5 on their high. Their low at 66.87.5. A settlement price $3.37.5 higher. They finished at $70.65. I guess the big news of the week came Friday. Smithfield announced that it had entered into an agreement with a major Chinese trading company for the purchase of 60 million pounds of palin-free pork for delivery by the end of December. That sounds like awfully good news for the livestock industry, at least for the pork producers.
Yeah, you know, every little bit of demand helps. I mean, it's not a huge amount, but by gosh, you know, we'll take it. But it's a sign that China's open and interested in that. And reading between the lines out of that news article, sounds like there's more business to be had there.
Okay, we're out of time. I'll get a final word from all of our panelists and our guests. We'll start with you, Chip. Anything to add for the end of the show?
You know, 13 billion bushels of corn is a lot to hold. I agree with all the pressure, with all the talk about pressure on basis going into the harvest season.
Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing.
Well, as Chip hinted on there, I think there's going to be a lot of battle this winter for acres, and there's going to be a lot of ups and downs in the market.
And can we get a word from you, Matt Bennett of Windsor Grain?
Well, as we get started with harvest, I just want everybody to remember to be careful out there.
Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities.
We got some fantastic prices still, some great grosses per acre. I think some steps should be taken to protect them. I don't think the bottom can fall out by any means because of these acreage concerns, but I do think that there's a lot of exposure there.
Our thanks to our panelists, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, and Pro Farmer editor Chip Flory for joining us for this edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, Farm Progress Show is next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Come visit Dave Dickey and I at the Farm Progress Show at the University of Illinois tent. We hope to see you there. Have a safe week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.